Hare Men were Bhagavad Gita tells that the problem of death can be solved, although death is everywhere in the material world. One who attains me, says Krishna, never has to take his birth again in the material world. There is a spiritual world, non-destructible, and one who goes there does not come back to the region of death. Why should the leaders of nations cling to the planet of their birth, where death is inevitable? Abai concluded, we wish that in their ripe old age, Mr. Shah and Mahatma Gandhi will make combined effort to educate men to learn how to go back to home, back to Godhead. After two issues of Back to Godhead, Abai had to stop. Printing was costly, but he kept writing regularly, working at Gita Upanishad, turning out new articles and philosophical purports on the scriptures, even in the same book in which he wrote his pharmaceutical formulas. One night, Abai had an unusual dream. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta appeared before him, beckoning. Right. What is beckoning?
Calling.
Yeah, calling. Yeah, you're calling, I come. You're beckoning someone, come, come. Okay. He was asking Abai to leave home and take sannyas. Abai awoke in an intensely emotional state. How horrible, he thought. He knew it was not an ordinary dream, yet the request seemed so difficult and unlikely. Take sannyas. At least it was not something he could do immediately. Now he had to improve the business, and with the profits he would print books. He went on with his duties, but remained shaken by the dream. In 1945, the war was over, and India still in turmoil under British rule. Abai saw a good opportunity to make his business more successful. In Lucknow, 600 miles from Calcutta, he rented a building and opened his own factory, Abai Charan Day and Sons. It was a major investment, requiring 40,000 rupees to start. 40,000 rupees then must have been a lot of money. A lot of money. And he began on a larger scale than ever before. Also, according to law, to ensure that he was not dealing in the black market or misusing chemicals, he had to employ 3 government inspectors. Yet, despite a high overhead, he established a good market, and its products were in demand. He closed his small operation in Calcutta and concentrated on the Lucknow business. Although the business was known locally to be haunted by ghosts, Abai had not been deterred, but when he began his operations, some of the workers came to him frightened. Babu, Babu, there is a ghost. Abai then went through the entire building chanting Hare Krishna, and after that, there were no more complaints of ghosts. Prabhupada mentioned that he was ghost-proof. you know, ghosts didn't bother him. He just go in and tell him to go away. Like that. On November 13th, Abai wrote to his servant Gauranga, mentioning some of the difficulties in Lucknow and asking him to come there to help. In his letter, Abai spoke bitterly of his wife, Radharani, and the children. Gauranga Prabhu, please accept my obeisances. Right? This is to his servant. Right? Got that. I received your letter dated 7th. Due to lack of time, I could not reply in time. I stay here alone with some servants. If I leave now, then I have to close everything down. Due to my leaving once and closing the business, I have lost about 10,000 rupees, and the goodwill has also been affected and my enemies have increased. That is why I am fighting, practically staking my whole life. I am staying here all alone in the middle of so many difficulties, not for nothing. That's why I was writing to you repeatedly to come here. As soon as you receive this letter, show it to Dubra. Take at least 10 rupees from him and come here. 10 rupees to get to Lucknow, right, from Calcutta. Well, it used to be that the train from Krishnagar to Calcutta was 6 rupees. That kind of thing, wasn't it 60 rupees you could go to Delhi or something? It's like 50, 60? You sure? Oh, 120. Okay. Wasn't much like that. These little cheddars we used to buy for 60 rupees.
And silver was 6 rupees a gram.
Yeah, yeah, it was really, really cheap then. And then suddenly it went up. You know. When you come here, I will make arrangements to send money to your home. What's the point in holding you back with an excuse that there's no servant or maidservant? I tried to serve them enough by keeping servants, maidservants, and cooks, but up until today, they have not become attached to devotional service. So I am no more interested about those affairs. When you come here, then I will go to Calcutta. If I see that they are interested about devotional service, then only will I maintain my establishment there. Otherwise, I will not maintain them anymore. Bring a quilt for me. Yours, Abhai. The two interests, family and preaching, were conflicting. Radharani had never shown any interest in back to Godhead. She seemed to work against his enthusiasm, both for publishing and for earning. The business was called Abai Charanday and Sons, and yet the sons were disinclined to help. And when he had called for his servant to join him in Lucknow, the family had objected, saying they needed Gauranga more there. What was the use? The family was interested neither in backing him in his business nor in taking up the life of devotional service. And since his business was primarily an outcome of his family life, he resented that he had to give it so much of his energy. It was the old economic law by Marshall that he had learned in college. Without family affection, a man's economic impetus is weakened. Economic law of Marshall. Because person is doing business for the family. So if the family is not reciprocating or appreciating that, naturally then his inspiration to do the business, at least in connection with them, is lost, right? So either he'll give up the business, you know, and taking care of them, or he'll get fully absorbed in his business because that will give some results and ignore the family, right? So that's Marshall's economic law, like that. Of course, there could be a compatible balance between family service and devotional service. Bhaktivinod Thakur had described two simultaneous obligations, bodily and spiritual. Social status, mental development, cleanliness, nourishment, and the struggle for existence were all bodily obligations. The activities of devotional service were spiritual, and the two could parallel one another. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, his family was a source of spiritual encouragement, and he used his social position to advance his preaching. Right? So we see here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving an ideal example. He is, you know, very nicely situated. He's a district magistrate, so it's, you know, socially very good, economically very good. And from that position, he could use that for his preaching. Right? At the same time, the benefits of it, take care of the family. But his family was very interested in devotional service. You know, that was there. It means what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was one of his sons like that. You know, another one of his sons, when he died, he manifest the Sri Vaishnav Tilak, you know, went to Vaikuntha like that. So, you know, he was doing okay that way. So we see is that for him, then it was a nice balance. The family was Krishna conscious. They were supportive of his work. They were supportive of his preaching. And so then the relationship was very strong. Their devotional service, his preaching, everything worked very, very nicely like that. But here we see in Abhay's family, they're only interested in themselves. They're not doing any service. They're not taking any interest in any service. And they're not even interested in the business. So they won't let him do the business, but they want to be taken care of. Right? They won't support him in the preaching, but they won't themselves take up devotional activities. Like that. So then, naturally then, one starts to wonder, why am I doing this? Right? It's not, especially here. Srila Prabhupada's older at this time, so then, you know, spiritual masters already beckoned him for sannyas, so then it even starts, the balance starts to even go more to off the scales. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's important to see that everything is properly organized, right? Because you're looking at marriage life means you're looking at many years living together. So that's what's going to have an effect. Not that, oh, that one looks so nice, or this one's so this, the one's so attracted. But the problem is that can go away. Just as suddenly as you can get attracted, that suddenly it can go away. Does that make sense? So it has to be something that there is a compatibility that within the devotional life, within one's material life, within, you know, whatever one's doing, that there's a compatibility, so there's a natural support, right? The support is natural, so therefore your inspiration is natural. Yes? No? Okay. Okay. But as Abhay is, so they're talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, his family was a source of spiritual encouragement, and he used his social position to advance his preaching. But Abhay's experience had been different. The two paths seemed to be at war. I guess this is the third war in this, because this chapter is called The War. So it wasn't clear. It was like started off with the Gaudiya Mutt, then as the war and the Gaudiya Mutt, then you had World War II, you know, India at war, and now we find out then the family is at war. Right? So. The two paths seemed to be at war, each threatening the other's existence. He felt himself operating something like the materialist he had criticized in his writings, absorbed in the struggle for existence with insufficient time for self-realization. Although his family made more and more demands of him, he was feeling less inclined to work for them and more inclined to preach Krishna consciousness. It was a predicament, right? Because as far along as I knew, his family, his sons, they never actually did anything. You know, I think one ran a little dinky bookstore. They never made anything out of their life because the father was such an expert business person and they could have learned, but they were not interested. Otherwise, why weren't they in the business? Why weren't they learning? Because then they could have learned the business on his level. But no, they were just into their own. They just wanted to be taken care of, sit at home, do nothing, and just get money. You know, so basically, useless family life. It was a predicament. He could only push on diligently, support his family, expand his business, and hope for a great success so that he could revive his publishing. But the Lucknow factory seemed almost beyond his means. He had purposely begun on a large scale with the aim of making a large profit. But monthly expenses were high. He had fallen behind in his rent, and now he was involved in a court case with the landlord. Although he was visiting Calcutta regularly, and shipping raw materials from Calcutta to Lucknow daily, he always found his family members in Calcutta uncooperative. His servant Garunga was also reluctant to work as Abai required and was thinking of going back to live with his family. Abai again wrote to Garunga on the 23rd. Offering my humble obeisances at the feet of the Vaishnava, Garunga Prabhu, notice the mood has changed. He was there just dealing with him, but now he's moved on to, he's offering his obeisances now to the Vaishnavas. I have received your postcard dated 18/11/45 and got all the informations. There's no need to come here just for a month after spending the money and then go back. For the present, take 25 rupees from Dubra and go home. Write a letter to me after your arrival. Then I will send the rest of your money in one or two installments by money order. Then from there, you let me know when you can come here. I have started my work here in a fairly large scale. You have seen that with your own eyes. So if there's no income, who will spend for a court in interrogation? Everything is on my head. The brother and sons are just eating and sleeping like a bunch of females and breaking the axe on my head. You go home, and as soon as you get the money, try to come back as soon as possible. Right? So therefore, also his brother is at home. Right? So his brother's doing nothing, his sons are doing nothing, and they're complaining. Yours, Sri Abai Charanday. Right? So it's become more formal because he wants to leave the service. He doesn't want to call. Before it was yours, Abai, because it was close, the servant. Now it's this is his name then. Okay. Chapter 6, An Unknown Friend. Here's the quote. Let the sharp moralist accuse me of being illusioned. I do not mind. Experts in Vedic activities may slander me as being misled. Friends and relatives may call me frustrated. My brothers may call me a fool. The wealthy Mammonites may point me out as mad. And the learned philosophers may assert that I am much too proud. Still, my mind does not budge an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda, though I am unable to do it. Madhavendra Puri. Aside from his difficulties with business and family, Abai had to survive the cataclysms of Indian independence and partition. He was not active politically, but one is hundreds of millions affected by the violent dawn of Indian independence. What's the dawn of Indian independence? Oh, now you got the book. What is the dawn of Indian independence? The beginning, yes. Just like the dawn, what were you going to say? Beginning, the sun comes up. It's when the sun comes up, that's the dawn. D-A-W-N, not D-O-N. Not the guy in Bombay with the big mustache. Like that. So the dawn, that's So when you say the dawn of Indian independence, means it was just arising on the horizon, coming up on the horizon, just beginning. So then in there, then, you know, it's supposed to be new, fresh start. But in here, it was the, cataclysm of Indian independence and partition. While Gandhi and the Hindu-dominated Congress were demanding a united, free India, the Muslim League, led by M.A. Jinnah, called for partition and their own Muslim nation, Pakistan. The conflict raged. In August 1946, the outgoing British government invited Jawaharlal Nehru, Congress Party president, to form an interim national government. But the League objected. The Muslim cause would be denied. Jinnah had already declared August 16th Direct Action Day, which amounted to little in most parts of India, but in Calcutta erupted in Hindu-Muslim rioting. In 5 days of violence, 4,000 died, and 1,000 more were wounded. In the months that followed, Hindu-Muslim rioting repeatedly flared up throughout India. Yeah, they wanted some demands to Muslims within the Hindu state, but somehow or another, the Congress wasn't taking it seriously, which it appears they should have. So instead, then they fought for a separate country. So then that was partition. So then India, then the most Muslim-populated areas in the east and the west, that becomes separated off, and that became Pakistan and what's now is Bangladesh. That was East Pakistan, and so like that. But they had some demands that they wanted within the country, but Congress wouldn't give them, so they ended up separate. Just like the Indians had demands they wanted to be taken care of, protected properly, they weren't, and so then they separated from England. So in the same way, the Muslims had their demands they wanted to be taken care of. That wasn't granted by the Hindus, and so then they separated off as a country. And then Pakistan, Bangladesh had its complaints and demands, and then it separated off from Pakistan. So, like that, the mundanity goes on. Early in 1947, when the new viceroy, Lord Mountbatten, met with Indian political leaders to plan transfer of power, riots again broke out as Muslims demanded Pakistan. At the threat of civil war, Congress finally agreed on partition. Right? Instead of on, they probably then agreed to their demands, but it was too late. You know, one of those too little, too late. You know. And on July 18th, the Indian Independence Bill passed without dissent. 1 month later, India and Pakistan emerged as independent nations, with Jawaharlal Nehru as India's first prime minister. Partition tore India, leaving 5 million Sikhs and Hindus in Pakistan, and as many Muslims in India. And the Great Migration began. Wow, 5 million Muslims were in India in 47. Now there are 200 million. Wow. And the Great Migration began. Refugees fleeing from Pakistan to India and from India to Pakistan clashed with each other and even with their own countrymen of the opposing faith. And the violence that erupted claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. Srila Prabhupada. Our independence movement was started by Mahatma Gandhi for uniting all the different sections of the people. But actually the result was that instead of being united, India was partitioned. And the partition became so poisonous that formerly there was only sporadic Hindu-Muslim riots in some places. But now there was organized fighting between Pakistan and Hindustan. So actually we were not being united, we were being separated. The Hindus would go to the mosque of the Muslim and break it. And the Muslim would go to the temples of the Hindus and break the idol. And they would think, we have finished the Hindus' god. Just like the Hindus would think, oh, we have broken their god. They are all ignorant. God cannot be Hindu. God cannot be Muslim. God cannot be Christian. God is God. We have seen in 1947... Hindu-Muslim fighting. One party was Hindu, the other party was Muslim. They fought and so many died. And after death, there was no distinction who was Hindu or who was Muslim. The municipal men gathered them together in piles to throw them somewhere. They fought. And in Bagh Bazar, there were heaps of dead bodies. And when it's a dead body, no one could understand who was Hindu and who was Muslim. Simply, it was to be cleared from the road. That was fun, probably. Abai was not expecting Indian independence to bring any real solutions. The leaders, unless the leaders were God-conscious, what change would there be? Now he saw that instead of suffering at the hand of a foreign rule, the people were free to suffer under their own countrymen. Yes, that's what many is like that. In fact, the fighting and suffering had increased. So they were saying it was bad under the British, but when they got independence, it was worse. Like that. You know, Mahatma Gandhi's thing was unite everybody, but it actually split everybody apart. Because he used the political method to get it, but the point is who's involved in politics? Right? Politicians. So therefore, then the politicians saw that they wanted an independent India, but they had their own purposes, not, you know, as something based on, and you know, Hindu culture, that just political platform. So then they saw Mahatma Gandhi had the people. He could encourage the people. So they pushed him forward as the main person. So all the people were behind it and behind the independence. But the problem was, is once the independence came, then the politicians stepped forward and did what they were originally planning, right? Because the idea of Swaraj was, now India is free from British rule, we can practice our own culture. But immediately Nehru then aligned himself not with the cottage industries and the natural economics of India. He aligned himself with the West to institute factories and all these kinds of things, rather than develop the cottage industries. Yes.
In fact, he was also sending his clothes for washing to London every day.
Oh, his clothes are being washed in London. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yes. Throughout the years of India's political struggles, Abai had never lost his desire to propagate Krishna consciousness. He had seen how promises of unity and independence had brought mostly higher prices and civic mismanagement. He had seen neighborhoods where Indians had lived peacefully for generations erupt in hatred and rioting in the wake of British and Indian diplomatic manipulations. It was as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had described it, quote, "Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader a leader or guru, a similar blind man attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home, back to Godhead, and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another material attached man are bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords." Do you have a problem there? Like that. Would you rather be doing bird work or something? Okay. You let the birds do their work and we will do ours, okay? And they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Right? Yeah. So in other words, they're materialists and they're suffering material existence. So they think, okay, we'll get a leader to lead us out of this material suffering. But their leader is also materially absorbed. So what is the solution? More materialism. So therefore, more suffering. Like that. So Prabhupada's point was that unless there's spiritual leadership, then there cannot be any material solutions. Right? You know, example is given that if you have a room full of darkness, now if you can you get rid of that darkness with more darkness? You know, it's dark inside the room and it's dark outside. Open the windows, open the doors, let in more darkness. No? Won't work. Yeah, you have to bring light. So that means the material world, you can only solve the problems of the material world through spiritual. Right? Only spiritual, because that's light. Then you'll solve the problems of the material. Yes? No? What do you think? Yeah? Okay. The Vaishnava prays to his spiritual master, who has opened my eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. And he feels obliged to help humanity by bearing the same torch. As a representative of the eternal Vaishnava parampara, Abai, can you guys just cool it? Bird's walking around. So why is it walking around here? Because it doesn't feel any threat. So that means somehow or another, by some strange freaks of fate, you guys haven't been harassing them as much as normal, right? So all it is just relax. You concentrate here. Right? What is it doing? It's looking for something to eat, right? Leftovers from the yajna or this or that. So it's doing what it does, right? You do what you do. So you don't need to point out that the bird is sitting right there, because the bird is just doing what it does, okay? You guys relax. The birds will always be around, right? It's because you guys think he's so close and that if I wave my hand, I can scare it, then you think I'm really special because of that. Ooh, I can scare the birds. So that's why the birds don't come around. But if you stop doing that, then they come around. Right? So just be happy. Okay? And that. As a representative of the eternal Vaishnava Parampara, Abai wanted to shed the light of transcendental knowledge into the field of current issues, into current crisis. Right? So Prabhupada was always dealing with the present. Right? So that's how one preaches, is that you take Krishna consciousness, you apply it into the modern situation, or the present situation, whatever is the present situation, you know, within Krishna consciousness or within the world, however it is, you apply it there because people in this world, they themselves are the ones that have to take up Krishna consciousness. Yes? So if you make it like that, then it's clear. They can see the difference. They can see how it's acting and functioning. How come you're, why is it others are wearing chadars and you're not? You know, I can understand if you're not coughing, you're sitting there and you're feeling nice and warm and toasty because you're a great brahmachari and full of brahma tejas and all that nice things. Great, but if you're feeling cold and coughing, why aren't you wearing something more? We already discussed that yesterday. You notice what, you know, what is he wearing? And what is he wearing? What about him? What about him? And this guy? Sweater, okay. So if you'll notice, you know, that... you know what I'm saying? So after class... you go and get yourself something to wear, okay? Yes, no? Yes. And from tomorrow, in the morning, you wear your chadar. Then when it warms up by breakfast, then you don't have to wear it. Then you put it in your locker, right? But in the morning, you wear it. So that means at night, you have to take it home. And that takes some planning, that takes some brain. Anyone want to take odds on that? Can you figure out which end of that you're working with or something? Okay. Abai wanted to shed the light of transcendental knowledge into the field of current crisis. That had been the purpose of Back to Godhead. Although since 1944, he had been unable to print the magazine. But even without the means to publish, Abai continued writing. His most ambitious project was Gitopanishad, his translation and commentary of Bhagavad Gita. Ever thought of things that keep you warm, you know? They can look nice. It doesn't have to make you look not nice. Yeah? Gandhi and others often spoke of the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita. Indians never forgot their Gita. But most proponents did not teach it as Krishna had taught it. They would not recognize Lord Krishna, the speaker of their Gita, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but would extract his words as slogans to bolster their own philosophies. Whether political leaders, religious leaders, or scholars, they almost invariably made their own symbolic and allegorical interpretations. What does that mean? No idea. Okay. They would make their own symbolic and allegorical interpretations. So in other words, all these political leaders, religionists, and scholars, they had their own philosophy, not Krishna's philosophy. Then having their own philosophy, then they would interpret, they would take portions from Gita that they felt supported their philosophy. And then with that, they would make their own connections, their own examples, their own everything that actually had generally nothing to do with Gita. Abai wanted to present Bhagavad Gita as is. It was to be 1,200 pages, three illustrated, beautifully bound volumes. For Abai, the books were already a reality, from which he was separated only by time. Over the past 2 years, he had accumulated hundreds of manuscript pages. He wrote in notebooks and on loose papers, and then typed the numbered manuscript pages. He could never give the book his full time, but gradually it began to take shape. He also preached Lord Chaitanya's message through letters, writing to many leaders in the government, to respected acquaintances, and to people whose articles he had read or whose activities had caught his eye in the newspaper, right? So people in a magazine that would write something, or someone in a newspaper, they write something that would catch his attention. They had some point that was good or this or that, you know, needed to be taken forward in Krishna consciousness. Then he would write to them to, you know, be involved, to like this, to write articles and that. So he was very active. So he was on the contemporary scene. You know, some may think that, you know, Prabhupada wasn't so up to date, but we can see he was right there. Where someone wrote an article, he would contact them, right? So he was interacting, he was interfacing with all these, what do I call it? No, I think they call that networking, right? He networked with all these people to connect. So that's like a new thing, to network, that they just started some years back. It is a prominent element, but Prabhupada was doing that back in 1945, right? You know, so. He also preached Lord Chaitanya's message through letters, writing to many people, leaders in the government. So respectable acquaintances and to people whose articles he had read or whose activities had caught his eye in the newspaper. Presenting himself as a humble servant, he wrote to them on his ideas on how India's original Krishna conscious culture could be applied as the successful solution to all manners of dilemmas. Sometimes his letters drew replies, and Abai would respond, fanning the sparks of interest wherever he found them. A well-known reformer, Mahendra Pratap Raj, was forming what he called the World Federation. Abai had read a news sheet, which Mr. Pratap had published from Vrindavan, in which he addressed all nations and peoples of the world and called for a unity of mankind. Abai wrote to him suggesting that Lord Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita provided a theistic science capable of uniting all religions. Mr. Pratap replied in May 1947, I admire your deep study of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. I myself am a great admirer of the great classic. I assure you that I am working strictly according to the book. Mr. Pratap mentioned his book, Religion of Love, and suggested that Abai read it if he wanted to know the World Federation's view of religions. In the meanwhile, Mr. Pratap wrote, I do not agree to your suggestion of making the name of Krishna or Govinda as the basis of the unity of nations, religions. This would amount to conversion and wouldn't lead to unity of religions. I highly appreciate your efforts in the direction of Back to Godhead. Abai got the book, read it, and in July 1947, while he was visiting Kanpur, wrote a reply. He had traveled to Kanpur not as a spiritual teacher, but as a pharmaceutical salesman. Yet a typewriter had been available, and out had come his preaching. So from Prabhupada's letter. In continuation of my last postcard, I beg to inform you that I have finished the reading of your book, Religion of Love. In my opinion, the whole thesis is based on the philosophy of pantheism, and the approach is made by the services of mankind. Religion of love is the true religion. It is the true religious idea, but if the approach is made through the service of mankind only, then the process is made imperfect, partial, and unscientific. The true religion of love is perfectly inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita. Besides, you have not quoted any authority for all your statements, so it is more or less dogmatic. If different men put different dogmatic views about religion and its essentials, who is to be accepted and who is not to be? Therefore, the approach shall be and must be authoritative, scientific, and universal. Abhay then gave a summary of the Bhagavad Gita in 10 points, concluding, the highest service can be rendered to mankind is therefore to preach the philosophy and religion of Bhagavad Gita for all time, all places, and all people. But the extended philosophical dialogue was not usually the result of his letters. In 1947, when Abhay wrote to high government officers of the newly formed government of India, suggesting a remedy for riots, they turned him away. When he asked to talk with the governor of West Bengal, the governor's secretary replied, His Excellency regrets that he is unable to grant you an interview at present, owing to heavy pressure of work. When he wrote to the assistant secretary to the Minister of Education, an assistant to the assistant secretary replied, The government of India regret that they are unable to accede to your request. Sometimes official interest took the form of a patronizing pat on the head. Quote, I am sure your scheme for establishing peace will meet with response from our prime minister. And another, he, the minister of education, is glad to see you are taking to rout out communalism. He suggests that you get in touch with. A local officer asked not to be seen. I thank you for all that you have written and the fine sentiments which you have expressed. It is no use arguing the matter, as I do not think that I can serve any useful purpose by joining the organization which you wish to set up, and therefore we need not take the trouble of seeing me. I wish you, however, all success. In October, after the Calcutta riots of 1947, Abhay wrote to the chairman of the Rehabilitation Committee, who replied, Regarding Hare Kirtan and Prasadam, you may make any program of your own, but I am afraid I am not interested in the same, nor my committee, and therefore there is no necessity of you meeting with me. Abhay was fulfilling his role as a Vaishnava preacher, and the secretaries of the various government offices were recognizing and addressing him as such. But they could not appreciate his application of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and his suggestions of Hare Kirtan. Occasionally, however, someone seemed interested. Mr. N.P. Ashtana, High Court advocate, replied, I am very much obliged to you for your letter regarding your broad scheme about spiritual improvement. I thoroughly appreciate the fine feelings which have prompted you to write this letter and the kindness with which you have considered my query. I have been a student of Bhagavad Gita and have also imbibed some of its teachings, but I still lack a good deal and will be glad to be guided by a person of your accomplishment. You may kindly, therefore, send your scheme to me, on receipt of which I will be able to express my views. So occasionally here and there, someone, like here's a high court advocate, means, you know, they had brains, they weren't a politician. But most of these others were, you know, government persons, so they were either politicians or assistants of politicians. So they were not so interested. But we see here is the high court, this high court judge, or no, advocate means a lawyer was interested. Right? So Prabhupada would constantly preach, sending these letters and that. So he's respected as a preacher. Not that they were interested to follow what he said, but he was actually known as a preacher and was, you know, respected in that way. Yes? No? Okay. So if you all notice, it's still cold. So if there's any need of adjusting your attire, then this would be a really good time to do it. Yes? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.